This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 835, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 835. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
That is correct, according to my script here.
And we are hosting this show. What is this show? It's the Pick of the Week show. Every week we read a bunch of books. One of us picks a favorite book called the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week, the patron pick. We try to do listener mail. We usually run long. We usually complain about it. But really not complaining, because what else do we have to do but look forward to the hellscape that is the world outside of the show?
Stick to the fun part, buddy.
If the show could be 4 hours, we would do a 4 hour show. It can't be 4 hours, though.
Do you think that we have used collectively the phrase "pick of the week" more than any other humans in history?
I would hope so.
Like, I would
between this show and we wrote the Pick of the Week review for 13 years every week.
I mean, wouldn't be just us. Obviously, we've used the word iFanboy more than anybody else, right, and we regret it more than anybody else.
Yeah, sure.
But the phrase pick of the week, where else would that be used so much? Perhaps, you know, like a grocery store?
Certainly used quite a bit, but not on such a regular basis and yes. Such a, you know, however many times we use it. Mm-hmm. We've got to be in the Guinness Book of World Records for having used the phrase pick of the week the most.
I would think. Someday there will be, you know, like, there will be a way to research. There will be an AI that can determine that it wasn't us. It was some guy named Yevgeny, you know.
We'll be the human power batteries that will power that AI.
Whatever.
They'll say, oh, human power battery 874 used pick of the week the most.
Right. That's fine.
Anyway, where are we in the script? All right. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Josh, you had the pick, and you... Son of a bitch, you had a great week of comics.
You know, I did enjoy my comics, but when it came down to picking something, I had a hard time with it.
I could imagine. I would have had a very hard time this week.
You know, I enjoyed reading my comics. It was really good, but like, what was the thing that stood out that, and I try not to make this part of it, but that we haven't said everything there is to say about. So that's often a problem. Like, well, is this the pick of the week? And it's true. Like, if I have nothing new to say about it, then is it really a pick of the week? You know what I mean? Like, these are the thoughts that go through my head. But if it's the best, it's the best, and it's whatever. I decided to make Maestro, World War M, number 4, my pick of the week. It is the most Marvel gosh good old superheroes that we have going on right now. It has been a joy and a delight from the very first issue two or three or four miniseries back.
This is the third miniseries.
Right.
Yeah.
So the last issue saw us, the Hulk Maestro was being attacked by a bereft and angry Namor, who had a big two-legged whale beast, this big sperm whale thing, say, "This is it. I'm using the big guns." He comes out. And what I thought was, he beats monsters all the time. This is no big deal. But much of this issue was the big whale destroying the city, given Hulk quite a time. And Hulk Maestro has sort of entered this Hellboy arena of this now, where, I mean, and it was almost like the same as a Hellboy story, where he in this issue, for whatever, he wasn't really evil. I mean, he is, because we know we've seen him do awful stuff or whatever, but in this one, he's like, "Yep, gotta fight the monster." You know, it's not, yep. You know, and he goes after it, and there's a bit in here, and I had forgotten that what Namor is doing is he's avenging the death of his wife and son, but he's also hallucinating that they're up on top of the thing talking. Them, and they're basically an angel and a devil on his shoulders. And there's a bit where Numa, the wife, and he's like, "Are you not pleased?" And she's like, "Why would I like watching you destroy all these people in this city?" And then they kick her off the top of the whale. "Ah, get away from here. We don't want to hear your stuff." And I was like, "What the?" And then later I realized they weren't there, and I was like, "Oh, I see." But so it was even funnier, because it was like in the cartoon where they would like flick the angel.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the shoulder and go away. You know, we get back and we spend a little time in Latveria with old Doom. Any variation on Doom is okay, as long as it's entertaining. You can do it until the cows come home, as long as it's entertaining and not boring. And elderly Doom in a wheelchair after the world has been destroyed is great. I can watch this. You know, he's hanging out with the Human Torch. Abomination was there, but he transported himself back, and now Abomination and the Hulk are like gonna team up. But they also just sat next to each other, tired on the shore, being like, "All right, let's go get him." You know, it's everything with good old superheroes. A little bit of a workaday thing, like this fantastic, amazing, dangerous world is just, they're just over it, but they can't stop. Herman Peralta, you know, doing the thing that he's been doing so well. Name I did not know, and I have no qualms with the art in this at all. Like I just read it and I go, "This is perfect for what the thing is. It is doing 100% of what the art needs to do in a book like this."
Yes.
And you know, the coloring is spot on. You know, when Jesus Zbertov, when your main character is Hulk, you know, that Hulk color is important, and then the way that everything else around it interacts with it. So you've got the Hulk color is a certain color in whatever the city is. I don't know what the city is. And then, is it New York?
Probably.
I think it was in the beginning, because Hercules was in Times Square, I think, when Maestro first showed up.
Probably New York.
Or he was the Maestro. And then as you go back to Latveria, and everything is that sort of darker green. You know, of Doom's, you know, everything is sort of that color. So this all sort of, there's this green theme that goes on throughout the book. And if you flip through, you can see it.
Yeah, it's the color of the sky in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just those little things that, like, that lets you know where you are. A lot of times we'll talk about books that switch, you know, time frames or switch places and you're not sure what's going on. That colorist is just nailing it. You don't even have to think about it, because it's just sending it right in your subconscious. You know, and a great big monster fight. So, end of the day, you know, this is the most of what I wanted out of a comic book this week. And this was the thing that delivered that.
Yeah, you had a great big Kirby monster. We had three books this week that were 90s throwbacks. And I was gonna suggest we do a 90s throwback corner, but you made one to pick. The patrons made another one, the patron pick. So, that corner went out the window. But
it's a fence.
it's a whole house. I love this issue. When I saw you made the pick, I was like, of course. There was several things that I could have made. You know, if I had had the pick this week, it would have been hard. I have sympathy for your situation. This continues to be, if not my favorite Marvel book, one of my favorite Marvel books being published. This whole series of Maestro comics, Herman Peralta, I think now is a big name for me. I think I'm going to be looking for his name after this book's over. We only have one issue left in this miniseries. Great little moments, little touches. I love Rick Jones, you know, putting on the Iron Man helmet, which was smart because right after that he puts it on, the Black Knight helmet falls on his own head. So he knew that his memorabilia placement wasn't exactly earthquake proof. And you're right, it's funny because like Hulk is the bad guy. Maestro is the bad guy.
100%.
He's the villain of the story. But, you know, Namor is indiscriminately murdering the city. And even Doom's like, dude, what are you doing? And so the bad guy has to be put in a position where he's trying to, this is his kingdom. Maestro is ruling this place. So he's trying to save his power base, but still he's trying to save the people of the city, even if he is a murderous dictator. And to do that, he's got to fight this giant sea creature whose skin is so tough from living at the bottom of the sea that Maestro can't penetrate it until he finds the weak spot. But Peter David is a master at this, and it's just sort of unbelievable. He keeps finding ways to make this Maestro story so compelling, even if we know you don't know the ending. Some of us know the ending, and it's just a great comic. It's just a really great comic. I'm sad it's going to be over, but... Yeah. I know it has to.
I wonder if Herman Peralta, like, this would be just the thing that he fits into. Like, this is be his moment. I mean, it can go either way. Like, maybe he'll be awesome on something else. But, like, sometimes, you know, like,
sure,
somebody's in a show and they're just perfect for that show, and then you never see them again. Guy who played Gaius Baltar in Battlestar Galactica disappeared off the face of the earth.
What was he just in? Oh, he was just on Picard. That's what it was.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, this was excellent. This has been excellent. This continues to be excellent. I loved there's a really great bit of body language acting at the end here, page 22. That actually, this is the last page where Maestro has grabbed Abomination's arm. They're sitting on the beach, or they're sitting on what was the beach, exhausted. And there's a silent panel where they're looking at each other while Maestro's holding his wrist. And then he flicks the wrist away, and you don't see the movement, but you see the aftermath, you know, Hulk's fingers pointing forward.
Yeah.
And you know, it's that whole understanding comics, the story happens in between panels. Like, you can see the movement, but you don't see the movement. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We know what happened because of the way the body language has been drawn. It was a really great sequence of comic book storytelling there. Herman Peralta is very good.
If we want to get into that kind of thing down here, that fourth panel where he's holding whatever that little device is,
mm-hmm.
he's got a thing, and the size of that compared to his hand, you don't know what that is exactly. Let's say it's a car stereo or whatever, and it totally sets what his scale is. You know what I mean? Right. Like you can see how big he is because of how big that thing is. Which just makes the world a little more realistic, a little more tactile, yeah. I think.
It's a calm device he created.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the end here. And I'm looking forward, if people don't know, what we're going to do is next month will be the issue 5, the final issue, and then the next Booksplode, which will be in August? I don't know. Whatever the month is, we're going to do the Hulk Future Perfect story that wraps up this whole Maestro saga. So we're going to have a little bit more Maestro talk before the day is done.
A little more.
I was slightly surprised, Josh, to find Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen's boss Perry White number one on the script.
Why is that?
Because it was only 8 pages of original content.
I didn't know that, though, when I started reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 pages of original content.
I thought the 8 pages weren't that great, to be honest with you.
They weren't great. They weren't Jimmy Olsen. And if that's sort of what you're expecting. But I think that if you look at them in terms of a framing device, that the rest of it goes around.
I enjoyed the other stories. I really enjoyed the Silver Age stories quite a bit.
Yeah, me too. Totally. And I enjoyed that. That really was the thing. Like, it's always nice to see Steve Lieber, colored by Nathan Fairbairn. And I'm mm-hmm. fine with that forever. And, you know, everything else was basically a reprint in this. So there's 6 stories, really 5 and a couple of pages. But there's 2 stories in the middle by Elliot S. Magan, drawn by mm-hmm. Kurt Swan. And I am enough of a a nerd now to be like, oh, I saw Kurt Swan. I was like, ooh, you know. And the first one is, you know, Perry White surrounded by his grandkids. He's telling them a story about when he was a kid and he was just a lowly newspaper, you know, one of those kids, newsboys from the street.
Newsies. He was a newsie.
And he cracked a crime, you know, saw somebody and solved the crime and put himself in great peril. And it was this like little, it's from 1976, but you know, clearly it was written by somebody who grew up in the 50s. Like it was just this sort of like time capsule moment of a tale, you know, about what makes a man and, you know, toughness and blah, blah, all that stuff that Perry White exemplifies. And then the second one, oh, it was even better. The Super Cigars of Perry White from 1974, because it had a little everything. Yeah. A little silver age, a little bit of it. A little, just a tiny Susan of like the 70s encroaching on these people who clearly grew up in the 50s. You know, so some alien, Perry White does something. He writes a story about these quote unquote mutants, other kind of mutants, I guess. And they decide to reward him by surreptitiously replacing his cigars with cigars that have been imbued to give him Superman-like powers when he smokes them.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some sort of classic Clark Kent bumbling around, which is interesting because they really felt like they had to sell the fact that Clark Kent was useless back in the day. And so everybody's like, oh, I went to school with this guy. Watch what a dork he is. Follow my lead. And he goes, hey, Kent. And then he has his friend trip him.
People were mean back then. Constantly, I know. Mean.
There's a great bit, and I want to say it was on the Conan podcast, where Bill Burr and him were talking about growing up in Massachusetts in the 70s and just how mean everybody was all the time. Oh, you gonna drink from a fountain? Are you thirsty, little girl? I was drinking a glass of water. What are you gonna do? And I was like, and it all flooded back to me. I was like, oh my God, you're right. Because in the 80s, it was pretty fucking bad, too.
Yeah.
But either way, like, people were just mean. And it's funny because we talk about, you know, now, like, the world's scary or whatever. It's like, people were just mean then. And now, they're probably still mean, but they act nice. I don't know. Either way, that story was super fun. And this sort of the take that Perry White had on having superpowers compared to Superman. You have them. I don't want them. But I'm going to keep one of these cigars. I had a lot of joy reading those. I really kind of like the story by Neil Clyde and Dean Haspel, Old Men Talking in Bars, which it's 2011. Just a short, and it reminded me of the brief time, and maybe he still does, where Wildcat had a son who was an actual cat, and I was like, oh, that's dumb. But, you know, besides that, you know, they just told stories, and it's Ted Grant's story, it's a good time, and it was well done. You know, it wasn't new. It was a bunch of reprints, but it was really fun to read. You know, when I got a 50-page book of a thing that I, you know, that has a bunch of stories in it. I don't expect to like all of them, but I did. That's why
One of the stories, I think it was, I'm trying to find one of them, but he's talking about how long he's been at the Daily Planet out here. It's page one of the first story. He says, he says, I've been running the Daily Planet for 26 years, working for her for 35 more. Does that mean he's supposed to be in his 80s?
I did notice that, and yes, that's how that math. Although
that doesn't work.
No, but he started working. I mean, he could say he started working for him when he started selling newspapers when he was like 8.
I guess so.
Because that was established in this one too. Yeah. But then also there was a time frame in here. Which one was it? It was basically one of the stories he told was pre-war. It was like end of the 30s,
right?
Because the story was about like the, you know, Hitler taking power. So, I mean, that's 1932.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense.
Before the war, yeah.
Comic book timeline
33. Yeah, but, and I'm fine with that. I'm 100% fine with that.
They don't usually call out the numbers like that, because they made me go, wait a minute, so how old is Perry White?
Right.
But I was actually surprised. I mean, like you said, the two Elliot S. Magan stories were the best ones, but I was surprised, considering how much we loved Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, that the original pages here were really sort of average.
I mean,
not great at all,
I think
really.
I think it's tough. Yeah. Jimmy Olsen lends himself to a whole different kind of wacky madcap story. you know, it's harder.
Yeah. You know, there was a lot of comics. A lot of comics. I think I had like 23, 24 comics.
Yeah, I had a lot more at the end than I thought I did at the beginning.
And there was a lot of books we're not going to talk about just from time constraints. But there's a lot of books we could be talking about that we aren't. I just wanted to let people know that because they're going to wonder why certain books didn't get talked about. It doesn't mean we didn't enjoy them. It's just there's an only number of books we can talk about. So let's move on to Black Adam, number one, a 12-issue miniseries from Christopher Priest and Rafa Sandoval, which I thought was a Black Label book. There was a Flash Aquaman Black Label book that I thought shouldn't have been a Black Label book. I thought this one should have been.
But it ain't.
Black Adam is so weird.
True.
The way he currently... Like, this book doesn't feel like it fits in continuity, right? That's why I thought it was Black Label, because it doesn't...
It feels like they're trying to shift continuity, you know, the same way that anybody does with the movie stuff.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense in the context of the Justice League, where, at least here, he's got a Widow's Peak. You know, for us as comic readers, the high point for Black Adam was the 2000s when he was in the Justice Society book. He was sort of their main, you know, antagonist, and he had the pointy ears like Spock and the Widow's Peak, and he was DC's Doctor Doom. He was awesome.
Yeah.
And now,
so he was Doctor Doom on the Avengers for a little while.
But now he's on the Justice League because of the Rock movie and the mandated he put on the team. And he's, if you just look at his face in the Justice League, you wouldn't know any difference between him and Superman. Like, he has the nice Superman hair. He's got regular ears. Like, they've completely changed him.
There's a couple of panels in here where his hair gets tussled. And he looks like Superman. And then the other thing that changed is that when he is, you know, out of Shazam mode, he's not a 1,000-year-old Egyptian monarch. He's Doom. He's young Doom.
Yeah, see, I was very confused because, again, I read a lot of those comics. And maybe when it happened where he turned into like a young, hip Dr. Doom named Theo. But I don't remember that happening. So I was very confused.
Me neither. I put it together because it was like Theo Teth Adam, and I was like, okay, this must be him. And he has a bandage on his hand.
As far as I remember, he never changed his appearance. He was always just Black Adam. Even when he would have gone to this meeting at the government as Black Adam, not as this kid.
Agree.
But putting all that aside,
yes.
as a comic, I liked it.
I did too. I think it was much better than I expected. Christopher Priest is a really good writer, but it doesn't always come together. And I think that this one did. As a comic, I think it was pretty successful. And I was into it. Once I sort of understood and accepted the realities of, you know, who's who now and why, and okay, this is what Black Adam is, I got into it. And then at the very end... The story is that this young black doctor, or maybe he's not Egyptian. A doctor though. Is he not? Is he
that
med
was the whole
student?
Thing? He was a med student. He was They were like it was almost confused. That was a bit confusing where he was like is this kid like a mental patient? But no, he wasn't a full doctor yet.
Okay, well either way, he's a kid working in the hospital, and you know some stuff's going on around him. He's not sure what, but he's been. Maybe a little too flippant through the whole thing. And I was like, all right, enough Poochie. And then you find out, like, Black Adam is dying and he's going to give the powers to this kid because that's his descendant. And that's when I was like, oh, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
We're doing this again? The movie's out. There's a guy. So at the end of the movie, does some other guy get the powers? I don't know. Here's what I do know. Christopher Priest is a big ER fan. That is what I learned in this. This kid Malik orders a series of tests that are straight out of any given
CBC
episode of ER. Graham of Ansef. On and on. He's basically Dr. Pratt. He's Greg Pratt here. That's who he is.
I liked the issue, but I had the same reaction to the ending. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Now we're going to do this with Black Adam? We're going to get rid of Black
Adam?
12
issues. 12 issues of this.
There's got to be something else going on here.
I hope so. I mean, I'm going to read it. is fine, but like maybe he's like going to be a Black Adam Jr.
Like Captain Marvel Jr., maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but either way, like, dude, how many stories like this are there?
Right
the
now,
older hero
so many.
Gifts his powers to the younger hero who is impetuous and has to learn.
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I was wrong. That Flash Aquaman book isn't Black Label, even though they call it Book One, which is the nomenclature they use for the Black Label books. So I don't know what's going on in DC. They can't even keep their stuff straight.
Take it a book at a time.
How can we be expected to? I loved Batman Superman World's Finest number 4. What's so great about this book, this tells you how much I love it. If someone asked me, what are you enjoying right now? I would say Batman Superman World's Finest is probably my favorite series going right now. And they say, great, what's it about? And I go, I don't know. That's how much I'm enjoying the book.
I don't know about this
demon or Nezra guy. And I don't really care. It's just the art is terrific. The characterizations are terrific. This world, this DC world that is in this Mark Waid bubble outside of the regular DCU taking place in the past is terrific. And they're facing some sort of ancient demon. I don't really care about the details. I just care that they're constantly bringing more characters in. So it started off with just Superman, Batman, and Robin, and now it's Supergirl, and now it's Green Lantern, and now it's Doom Patrol, and now it's John Jones and Donna Troy and Firestorm and Red Tornado and Black Canary and Kid Flash. And like, just keep doing it. I don't really care about Nezra, if that's even the name of the character, but I love everything else going on around it.
Now, this wasn't like a continuation from the last issue, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't remember. But again, I don't think that's part of what you're talking about. I was like, it doesn't really matter. I was like, wait, when did this? Who cares? I don't have to worry about it.
Green Lantern showed up at the end of the last issue to stop Superman and Batman and Robin and Supergirl were in the past trying to get information on this demon.
Yeah, but and I put that all together eventually. Yep. You know, like
it's written such a way you could pick this issue up and you've gotten everything.
Right, and that's how it used to be, and that's how Dad did it. And
there's a line in here that made me laugh where, you know, this demon has taken over Hal Jordan, so they're fighting Hal Jordan, Superman, and Batman, and Batman's like, God, I really miss the days so you could just hit him with a brick, a yellow brick. Like, that was very funny. And, again, the Dan Mora art, this is, like, perfect for Dan Mora. These big, colorful, action-packed pages full of DC characters. He's really excels at this, and it's just a really good-looking book. Like, I think I read this book the very last book. That's where it is right now. It's number one in my slot.
That's great. That's nice.
So again, the mythology of it, I don't know, but Superman and Batman combined into one person with a weird costume. Sure, why not? Just go for broke, Mark Waid. This is a week for old timers, Josh. We had Peter David, yep. Mark Waid, Christopher Priest, Ron Mars. We could have talked about Kurt Busiek's last issue of the current arc of Aerosmith. So you had Busiek, David, Mars, Waid, Priest.
This is the all stars. This is the dream team. This is the 92 dream team.
This is a great, great show from 1997. I thought all those books were great. These guys still got it.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, talk about how you can help support the show. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's the main way to help support the show. That's how shows are unlocked. Additional shows. That's why we do the media explode every month. That's why we have the talk explodes and book explodes. All of the great contents because of the patrons. And we have more stretch goals. People constantly ask us when we're going to do TV reviews. Someone asked us just this week if we're going to review Ms. Marvel. Got to hit that next stretch goal if we want to start reviewing TV shows. It's more any additional shows in our monthly schedule have to be unlocked just because of the time commitment that they require. So if you want to hear those TV reviews, we got to hit that next stretch goal. And all that happens at patreon.com/iFanboy. We are pretty comfortably above the media explode stretch goal, so we're probably out of danger for a little while. And, you know, They have great perks. We had a hangout, a patron hangout with them last weekend. We have another one coming up soon. They have the Discord channel. They have the Facebook group. They get to vote in the patron pick. It's a fun time. So patreon.com/FMI. Considering support, you don't have to be anything more than a $1 patron. I mean, that's $1 a month. That's, you know, for the entire year, it's like 2 or 3 comics. So
we get like a quarter for that. So $3.
So just, you know, consider supporting us at patreon.com/FMI. FMI.threadless.com, 12 t-shirts, designs. You can get those designs on other things. The most recent design is the Gosh design that Josh referenced during the Hulk review. We were just talking this past week how we need to come up with another shirt design, so that'll be starting that process. And if you've been listening to the show, that process will probably take us 3 to 5 years. So it's begun. The wheels have slowly... It's like in the movie when the old wheel has to be sort of greased to get going. It's like, yeah, it just starts turning. The wheel's just begun to turn.
You knock that rust off, though.
Yeah.
And it'll go.
It'll go. It's just we've started the process. FMI.com/supports our digital tip jar via PayPal. If you just want to throw in a couple bucks, don't want to be a patron, that's fine, too. Or if you're an eccentric billionaire and you don't like the way the world's going, you want to just start throwing money around like a lunatic, that's where you can put it, too. FMI.com/Amazon. You can shop there. You can buy our Booksplode books. And bookshop.org is our partner for local bookstore support, and you can find those links. Usually during the Booksplode post, they didn't have Superman for All Seasons in their system at all, so I couldn't put a link for books for a bookshop for that one, which is surprising. I think that book's out of print, which is crazy. But all those are the ways you can help support us. And thank you for those who do. We appreciate it. The show could not go on without you.
Over at Dark Horse, there was a new series that launched called The Lonesome Hunters. It was created, every single thing in the book was by Tyler Crook, an artist who I really like, worked on BPRD for a while, had worked on a book called Petrograd that we liked a lot. It was a book of the year one year.
Those are book of the year, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, there's these, I guess they're Christian fundamentalists, and there's some demons, and the one guy's dad does all this stuff to be given a magic sword so he can strike the final blow at the demons. They go into this spot. Everybody is killed except for the kid with the sword who can't do it, and he runs away. We cut. The man is an old man in the more or less present times, and he keeps to himself and doesn't talk to anybody, and he thinks himself as a coward, and you know he's the old man from Up. You know, it's just, he's that, and some magic shit goes down in his building where there's a watch that is also magic, and a little girl comes to get his help, and he's like, I gotta get the sword. And that's where we are, basically. You know, and it's it wasn't amazing, but is really good looking. It was original enough that I am curious what comes next. It was imaginative, I think, you know, doesn't look like anything else. It doesn't feel like anything. It's not necessarily a horror book. It grabbed my attention, and I'm looking for the next one. And it was, you know, it wasn't like supernatural mixed with something. So it wasn't like, oh, you could do this without the supernatural. That was part of it. So I'm not complaining about that part. You know, if any of that sounds good, check it out from Dark Horse this week.
I'm reading 2 X-Men books that both came out this week, and Immortal X-Men is the Kieran Gillen, Lucas Wernick series that focuses on the council on Krakoa that runs everything. And I'm actually very interested in that part of the story. That was one of the things I liked about the whole setup of the Krakoa story. And so I was reading this issue, and I was about halfway through, and I was like, do I hate this? I think I hate this. Like, it was all about Destiny, and I don't think I really like Destiny. And the entire thing was very sort of pretentious caption box thoughts from her about the different timelines and Mystique's dead and all of them. And is she really ruining everything? Or is it really Moira? And let's go back and fix things. Another X-Men are ruined. And I was just like, someone for the love of God, punch Juggernaut. Just punch Juggernaut. Someone. And that's the kind of action I'm getting in X-Men 12, which is the Jerry Doug and Pepe Larraz book, which I don't know wouldn't have been my pick of the week this week.
Really?
Luckily, I didn't have to decide, but after I read it, I was like, God damn, that was awesome. And this is the X-Men as, hey, look, we forget the X-Men superheroes book. And it's just all action and great characterization. Jerry Duncan is kind of made to write the X-Men. Everything I've read from him from this reboot has been terrific. He was doing the the Marauders series, which was excellent, and now his run on X-Men so far has been excellent. And this, in this issue, there's been some Mr. Sinister shenanigans, but also the X-Men go to why am I dumb? The reporter Ben Urich, and they say, "Hey, sorry, we stole that story from your head. Here, have it back." And he wrote the expose that the X-Men are basically immortal now and have solved death. And it was just big action, great character work, terrific Pepe Larraz art. And the irony is, when I got to the end of Immortal X-Men 3, I was like, well, that was pretty good, because the second half of the issue got back into the shenanigans of the ruling council. And so, as much as I hated like the first half of the issue, which I really did, I thought I was going to drop the book. By the end of the book, I was like, oh, maybe I'll keep reading. So that's my particular mental illness.
I can see why that would be. That's a challenge.
But reading them together was actually good, because it was like, okay, here's what I love about the X-Men plus what I hate. But
well, you started to talk about it was like all this pretentious and this, and I looked up and I was like, Kieran Gillen. Okay, got it. And then which he does lots of good things, but he also can tend to do that thing.
It was just very plodding and very like portentous and you know, like, I don't care. Stop.
Pretentious.
I hate Destiny.
It's portentous. It's a different. Well, I guess you also would have meant that too.
Yeah, portentous. Like okay. Pretentious. That's and portentious. Because she's Destiny. She knows everything about the future.
Fair enough. Where are we at here? Silver coin number 11. I want to bring this up because I wouldn't say I've been a big fan of James Tynion's The Fourth's work.
Oh,
No. Specifically, this every issue has been written by a different person, and so I was like, I don't know so much if I want to, because I don't love Tynion's work all that much. I thought this was a very good story.
Yes, James Tynion The Fourth, drawn by Michael Walsh, draws all the issues. Who's in charge of the book? I was impressed in the beginning. I was like, wow, this is very restrained for Tynion. Like it was.
Yeah.
It was sort of very sparse in the beginning, which is sort of the anti-Tynion. And, you know, all these stories are short horror stories. The only thing that I thought made me think twice was I was trying to decide if they were setting up sort of a recurring story here. I mean, the recurring story is the coin throughout, this evil coin that was forged in the fires of the witch trials. And it, you know, bounces around the world and through history, destroying lives. And here I couldn't tell if they were setting up this guy to be sort of now a recurring character, which I'm not super into. But this particular issue itself was good.
Disconnected, so it's just this thin link between anthology horror stories.
Yeah.
And I gotta be honest,
the coin's enough. I don't need people not to be recurring.
Right, so, they came upon the coin. That ain't good.
So this one...
I feel like it changes the person who's in contact with it, which actually wasn't what happened on this one. It was like there was a wish.
It was like an evil genie situation where this woman who owns a diner that's failing because a chain restaurant's opened up next to them. And by the way, if your choice is like a chain burger place or a diner burger, you're going to go for the diner burger.
Nah,
anyone with any sense
longer
is going to do that.
If you have time.
It doesn't matter. If you need, I mean, look, life is short. You go for the diner burger. So she wishes for more customers to come in and be hungry or something. And so then...
And I wish this place would be filled with customers and that they're hungry. She added the second sentence, which is what her undoing clause.
And so there's a stream of people come in and they are insatiable. They eat all of her food. They keep ordering more. They clear out the pantry. They start dying from rupturing stomachs. They start eating the silverware. They start eating each other. And it was horrible, but it was, I thought, really well done.
It was a great Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. And there's nothing more to it. And you know, Michael Walsh is a great artist and he's gotten so loose over this.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a time where you'd see his work and you'd be like, oh, he's very Chris Somney-like. And it still is to a certain extent. But really, if you look at what this looks like compared to what I sort of thought of his art as looking like, it is just... loose. I mean, loose is the word. Like, it's just very relaxed and expressive, you know, mm-hmm. while still doing this. She's a great comic book artist.
Yeah.
You know, he should be a much bigger name than he is. But the fact that he gets to do this kind of series and it's gone on for this long, you know, that tells you a lot about how talented and respected he is, I think.
And I like. Hopefully, this is what he wants to be doing. I like that he's doing what he wants to be doing.
I think he's got to be.
And it's very unique in the industry.
Yeah, you
know,
totally.
How often does an artist get to run an anthology series of horror stories? You know,
and also you and I don't like horror stories.
No,
and I get excited about this every time an issue comes out.
Yeah,
and he gets pros to write them, so it's not, even if they're not your favorite pros or whatever, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, these are big names.
Yeah, and they do a good job.
He's going to run out of them eventually.
Yep.
I'm writing for issue 45, by the way. I didn't tell you.
He's saying, this is like his Talksplode. He's like, I think I got everyone.
Going great at first.
Yeah.
Now we're going to sort of enter the 90s or back corner. Silver Surfer Rebirth number 5, Ron Mars, Ron Lim, Don Ho, Israel Silva, Josephino. This is the final issue of this Silver Surfer story that takes place back in the 90s. And I fucking loved it. And the thing is, for much like you with World's Finest, I opened it up and I was like, wait, who is this dude that they're fighting? But it didn't matter. And why are they fighting him? It didn't matter. I thought it was full of terrific character moments. I love this version of Silver Surfer. You know, there is no reality in which you triumph, so swears the Silver Surfer. I miss dialogue like that. Like, this is the good stuff from that era. I loved Silver Surfer back then. I love Ron Lim. He's you know, one of those guys in the 90s who was one of my favorite artists. He was a big, 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 big name at Marvel. So big that he took over for George Perez on Infinity Gauntlet when George couldn't finish it, which is unfortunate. You know, again, like, I don't, the details I forgot, but, you know, the little stuff like Norrin getting zapped back to his old reality with the reality gem and seeing his wife and possible kids, and that was all good, and using the board accidentally killing the dude. Like, all of this was good. All of this was good.
I agree with you.
Were they calling it the gems or stones?
Infinity's gem. I don't remember now.
I don't either, but hopefully it was gems. Anyway, let's move on. Those are the books we could talk about. I could have added 4 or 5 more books from the list, but we have to do what we have to do. Let's move on to the patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron gets a vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the winner by one vote, it ended up being very, very close, was New Fantastic Four number 1 from Peter David, Alan Robinson, Mike Spicer, and Joe Caramagna. We're still in 90s corner because this is a continuation. And you got to believe, Josh, this is because the Maestro series has been super popular, of a story from the early, early 90s. I think it was even 1990 or 91. It was very early in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That Walter Simonson wrote and that Arthur Adams drew. It was a 3-issue arc of Fantastic Four. In fact, Marvel reprinted them in one handy-dandy collection last week, and I reread that in anticipation of this one.
Oh, that must have helped.
Yes. Although not really. It doesn't really connect, other than they're hanging out together. But here we have the quote-unquote New Fantastic Four, which was the Gray Hulk, Mr. Fix-It, Wolverine, Spider-Man, and Ghost Rider. All four characters were extremely popular in the early 90s at Marvel. Four of their most popular characters. And so they just stuff them. And even back then, they knew what they were doing. Like, the, you know, the tagline of Fantastic Four is World's Greatest Comics Magazine, right? It says it across the top. At least it did back then. And one of the issues says the World's Commercialist Comics Magazine. Like, because they knew what they were doing. They took their four top characters and they put them in the Fantastic Four for 3 issues. They even have a gratuitous Punisher cameo who was also super popular at the time. So it was just like they were winking at the audience with that arc. But, this was a direct continuation of that. And a Nick Bradshaw cover looks very much like Arthur Adams. For a second,
yes,
I thought it might have been him.
What's funny, because when you said Arthur Adams, I went, oh, I see that. I mean, I knew it wasn't him, but, like, I realized what they were. And actually, that actually was the first thing that brought it back to me about what it was.
Yeah.
I had the whole time I was like, I have a vague, vague recollection of this.
Yeah, and that story, there was a rogue Kree agent who came to, not Kree, a rogue Skrull who came to Earth, and she disabled all the Fantastic Four and tricked everyone into thinking they were dead. So Wolverine, Spider-Man, Hulk, Ghost Rider, who were all in the neighborhood at the time, she gathers them together at pretending to be Sue Storm, and they go to avenge the deaths of the Fantastic Four, but they weren't actually dead. And then they're not. They're never really the Fantastic Four, but that was sort of the thing. Mm-hmm. This was good, but not nearly as good as Maestro.
Yeah, it gave me very little like of the joy. I didn't really feel one way or the other about it, to be honest.
Like, I enjoyed it probably most because I just reread those other books. But like, Peter David is maybe the all time Hulk writer. So he wrote that original Maestro story. So he lives in that world. He knows those characters and everything, and they're perfect. And Herman Peralta is amazing. This was like lesser than in all ways. The yes. art was lesser. It was fine. Alan Robinson's name, I don't know. At first, I thought it was. I was like, wait, Alex Robinson drew this? And then I was like, wait, no. It's the other guy, but it wasn't him either. Who's the other guy I'm thinking of?
Alan Davis?
No. Alan something. Who that Beatles book, terrific artist.
Andrew Robinson.
Andrew Robinson. I thought it was him. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. Then I opened it. I was like, nope, not him either. Mm-hmm. It was fine. The art was fine. It didn't really do anything for me, but it didn't not do its job.
And the problem there is that fine is one thing, but when it's literally directly compared up against the book that I made pick of the week,
yes,
fine is worse.
Yes.
Because it makes no impact at all for me. Like, I just... Like, it was fine, but it was like right now, I could read it. I did my job. I was going to read it anyway, even without Patron, but I couldn't tell you a thing about it. Like, basically all of the people were in different places, mm-hmm. and they all found themselves together, you know, for apparently no reason. And, you know, I just, like, it was whatever that X factor is, it wasn't there.
Did they kill the Vulture? They had him get hit by a jet.
Like, I mean, back then it could.
He doesn't have super strength. He's an old man. He gets hit full on with the airliner. No, not even, a private jet in the nose. Like the nose of the jet hits him in the back.
That's true.
And he falls to Earth, and all the money still flaps down behind him. But like, I was like, is he dead? But
I'll tell you what 90s. Else would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
That would have taken that plane down. Everyone aboard that plane would be dead. That's how planes work. You can't hit a thing really hard.
Well, the plane
planes,
was...
Planes are predicated... Plane. Planes are predicated on the idea that they don't hit anything.
Right.
Once you break that rule, everything changes. anyway, you had Michael B. Jordan the Priest in this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, like, it...
There was some demon in Vegas possessing people, and so they all go to Vegas because that's where Mr. Fix-It is. Lives. He was running a casino and or something. I didn't read it. I just remember that from osmosis. And it was fun seeing, you know, like a Ghost Rider that's more recognizable to me than the current one. And not even because of the person behind it, but just because of the role that mm-hmm. Ghost Rider played in sort of the dialogue. And it's sort of inexplicable to me, you know, for people who are younger, me, that he was one of the most popular characters in Marvel during that time.
Yep.
A different kind of Wolverine. You know, he's not Hugh Jackman. He is short and runty.
The hair is ridiculous.
And angry. And then, you know, it's a fun group. They were fun together, but I'm waiting for the story to be better than it is, which is unfortunate. Because we just heaped a lot of praise on Peter David, but I don't know if the art's helping.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually, you know, we talk with reverence about a certain time period of comics, and this is probably more what most of those comics were like, you know, mm-hmm. it, you know, and they said it was a commercial cash grab. Fine, you know, all of it's fine, but, you know, it didn't, it's not sticking with me.
I mean, I get why they're having Peter David do this. However, Walter Simonson is alive and well.
Maybe he didn't want to do it.
Maybe he didn't. But, you know, if you're going to do these throwbacks, Ron Mars did write Silver Surfer. Peter mm-hmm. David did write the Hulk Maestro story. Maybe they offered it to Simonson and he said no. But and if they'd offered it to Arthur Adams, we would have gotten the book in 15 years. But it was a little less than, a little disappointing. I was excited to read it. It was disappointing.
Same.
Ratings. New Fantastic Four number 1 out of 5.
A generous 3.
Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, that's a generous number. I'll say it. I was thinking that while you were talking about it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read the next one, but I'm not guaranteed to finish it.
Yeah, my instinct is that I'm not going to read it, but I could also see myself being like, all right, let's give it a shot. Maybe it'll pull itself around.
I wish Nick Bradshaw had drawn the issue, because he does have that Arthur Adams thing that would have made it feel of a piece with the original miniseries.
Yeah, but he read the script and he was like, this isn't that good. Give it to someone else.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go to add a book, vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or a higher level, we give you Superpower live on the show. Like Charles Rose. Charles Rose is always in perfect balance. Even he could get up on his elbow and be in perfect balance. On one finger, on his head, on his shoulder. He's always perfectly balanced. He's like a fine German knife, you know, chef's knife.
So he would make an excellent sword fighter.
Yes.
For example.
He never trips or stumbles or, falls.
Right.
He's always in perfect balance somehow. Huh. Like, it doesn't make sense physics-wise. Like, he could be all in one way and, you know, it shouldn't work, but he's got perfect balance.
Can I tell you something about me?
Yeah.
I frequently almost fall. I usually don't fall, but I very frequently
almost
fall. I'm pretty good at missing that last part of the fall.
What happens when you do fall?
I mean, it hurts. I'm 45 and I weigh a lot.
Broken bones.
Not since I was 8.
Brittle bones.
Actually, I don't know. I may have broken a rib or I may have cracked a rib a couple of times, but I never got it checked out because you can't do anything for it anyway.
Right. We can tape you.
But I actually broke my arm when I was 8. So.
That was the last fall.
Yeah. I was on my bike and I hit a sandy patch and I went down and I had a cast on my left arm all the way up to my armpit for the whole summer. Ugh. I got the cast off. Wait, though. I got the cast off. 2 weeks later, I slipped in a mud puddle and broke it again. And so it's possible, if we look backwards, like maybe that's where I learned to not fall all the way.
So you have a really dangerous arm situation going there.
It hurt. Actually, my wrist, it broke both bones all the way through. My wrist hurt off and on through my early 20s. Like every once in a while I would do something and I would feel like a really sharp, awful pain, but it's gone away since then. I think it's good now.
Do you like know when it's going to rain?
I'm telling you, sort of things like that. Now, instead of that pain, I get phantom kidney stone pains when I'm stressed out.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, wait a minute, is this happening? I was like, no, it's just stress. Okay.
All right, Ryan.
I believe I need to come up with a power now. Even if I had thought of one, it'd be gone. Mm-hmm. But Ryan A. Abseed. I'm going to go Abseed. Is that spelled correctly? Like, I can't even place A-B-C-E-D-E. That doesn't seem real. Like, if you were like, oh, that looks Portuguese, or perhaps, you know, I don't know. So, whatever. A-B-C-E-D-E-D. I'm going to say
almost,
it like
it's
that.
Almost there. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, he always has time. Hey, do you have time to do this? Yeah. And it's not that he's time traveling, but there is a sort of temporal distortion around him that he always has time for things. Because one of my weaknesses is that I never have time for the things that I think I have time for.
Right.
Which makes me a little bit late all the time. And it isn't that I'm lazy about things. It's that I think things will take less time than they do. And they always take more time. But he always has time. Time is flexible around those things that he wants to do. I mean, right. And it's not like, do you have time to go to Paris and back before lunch? It's not like that. But you can fit all the things in. Like, just stop at the store, but we don't have late. It's just, okay, we got time for that. Go in, do the thing, you know, make it to the airport on time. The traffic, it's there, but he makes it. There's time. It's always his time.
That's a good one. That's actually very good.
Yeah, I could use that. Patreon. I don't know anyone who couldn't.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. And like Ryan and Charles, get your own superpower live on the show. Hey, we've got time for one email, which is good because we got one in the script. Jack from London, England, in the United Kingdom, says, I've just started reading Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, and I've been really enjoying it. It got me thinking about that. Apart from this run, most of Moore's acclaimed work are mini-maxi works, like Watchmen being 12 issues, Killing Joke being a one-shot, etc. That led me thinking about the series structures some writers use in their work. For example, while I love his run on Batman, I see Tom King as a 12-issue to tell a complex story kind of guy, and Dan Slott as a 50-issue with a bunch of stories that shows the love of the characters he has kind of guy. Can you think of any writers who do both in a good way, and would you like to see any writers change their structure?
Yes.
I mean, most writers are Dan Slott, because most comic stories are, they go as long as you tell them. There are very few writers who have the luxury of doing what Tom King does.
Well, when you say most writers are Dan Slott, I think that that does Dan Slott a disservice.
What I mean is they tell ongoing comic stories.
They have that job.
Right. But they don't get the luxury of having a 12-issue prestige miniseries. Like, that's all I mean. I'm not denigrating Dan Slott. I'm just saying most writers are writing ongoing comic book stories. Very few of them are Tom King.
And you know, people like Dan Slott. You know, I didn't love Spider-Man, but I think it's fairly clear that many people were hooked into that Spider-Man run the whole time. And it was a long run. And that's how you and I have felt about his Fantastic Four run. Mm-hmm. And that he's managing to do that thing where it keeps you interested and gives the perception of growth and change and plot movement when, in fact, there will be none at the end. And I don't mean that bad way. Just a feature of the thing. Tom King, you know, is for all intents and purposes a novelist. And the 12-issue maxi series is his version of a comic book novel. Lots of people for a long time would do the 6-issue or 8-issue comic book novel. Tom works in the 12-issue milieu. That is tricky because most people actually can't fill 12 issues worth of stuff if that's their beginning, middle, and end. Your issues 6 through 9 are usually garbage. That's how that works, unless you're really good at it. And that's why he's really good at it. And even then, there's a little bit where, I suspect he knows well enough to know when and if he has enough material to fill 12 issues.
It isn't always 12, even if they, like, Supergirl was 8. I know they wanted to do more. DC would only give him, was it 8 or 9 or 7? Something like that. But I know they wanted to do more, but they didn't get it. But still, he managed to do it in that time. I don't think all of them are exactly 12.
And sometimes that's not a bad thing.
Right.
I think that miniseries was long enough, and I loved it. I'm not, but more wouldn't have necessarily helped get to the conclusion. I think of Alan Moore. Alan Moore could do anything. Moore could do a long run. He did, you know, like 20 something of some of the top 10 books or something like that. Swamp Thing is another. He had a really long run on that, and it was great. He could do a 5-pager, and it would be amazing. He could do, you know, he did the preeminent 12-issue maxi series with Watchmen. All those things. Grant Morrison.
Yes.
He's not really good at the long run.
Well, I don't say that's true. He had a clean run on Batman and on Justice League.
I think Justice League was more successful than Batman, and I think that he gets, you know, like this last one, the Green Lantern. I feel like he's so good at saying what he wants to say, he does it pretty quickly. Mm. And when he has more room, then he explores other things, and it tends to not hold together as much. But I don't mean it as a criticism at all. I just think that...
I think
you wouldn't know what a problem was until it swim up and bit you on the ass.
That most, we just don't know, because most comic writing is geared towards the ongoing. So we don't know. Maybe there's a writer out there who's doing ongoing books that would be great at 12-issue runs, but that's, the market really isn't for that. So we don't know what they're capable of. Most writers are put on to do an ongoing series. So I think we just don't know. I mean, like, I'd say Bendis is another guy who does both. Like, he obviously done incredible long runs, but can do great miniseries. Almost all of his recent Jinx World stuff as just short minis, and I think a lot of them have been really good. But you've got to be a Bendis or a Tom King or somebody like that, or Morrison, to even get that treatment. Otherwise, they like
take
over Green Lantern.
I think you can say that his minis, Bendis's minis, were pretty good or whatever, but I think that he excels on the long...
Oh, sure.
The long single character run.
Well, Avengers was...
You know? You know, and you'll notice these all get shorter over time. Like, these guys, you know, like, Preacher was 60 issues, you know, now Garth Ennis can do anything he needs to do in about 3-5.
Which is the nature.
Yeah, I know, but... You know, which is also sort of like what they'll give them or whatever. You know, there's a little period of time where, like, Mike Carey has done a couple of longer Vertigo series, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 issues. And those are much better than any of the ongoing stuff that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, he's a novelist. He wasn't a novelist before, but he became one, and it all makes sense when you go back. Like, oh, he's got a story with a beginning, middle, and end, you know, that he's telling over a long period of time. I think Brubaker has figured out, he's done some great long runs in comics, and don't get me wrong, but, you know, these, you know, bursts of interconnected miniseries are the thing that he seems to be great at. These seasons of television, these anthology kinds of things.
Well, I mean, Criminal is pretty unconnected, but I think a lot of writers, if they're any good, could do both formats. It's just that they don't get the chance in comics really to test that theory out. You know, like, I bet Jason Aaron would do a really terrific prestige 12 issue miniseries, but he's a comic writer, so he goes on the 50 issue Avengers run because that's what his job is. Most comic writers are not employed to write 12 issue prestige miniseries. At least right now. I think there's slightly more and more happening, but it's just not the case because that's not the business model. Unless your guy,
you know, Tom King,
is so excelled at it that it became his business model.
He's really good at short stories.
Yeah.
Like, he's done a bunch of really quality sort of 5-8 pagers. Mark Waid can also do anything.
Mark Waid can do all the formats, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. To me... The short story is, you know, that's the test of metal. Like, can you get me in 6, 8, 10 pages? You know, can you do the whole thing, beginning, middle, and end, tell the thing? You know, you have room to make a lot of mistakes in a really long run, and you can take an issue off here and there. You can do whatever. You know, and I don't think that there's that many people. I know that, like, that's the main job in comics, but I don't think there's that many people who are consistently able to sustain long runs on a comic book without that feel like they have some direction to them. That's why we still talk about things like Peter David's Hulk run. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, you know, Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man run and, you know, Stan and Kirby's Fantastic Four, although, you know, that might be an outlier in this context, but, you know, that is the real skill of the game. And, I think a lot of the new guys, a lot of the current generation, I don't think they're as good at it. I think they're good at coming up with concepts. They're good at pitching an image series that starts with number one. But, and you've seen this in Image a lot, where somebody will do their image series, and because of the economics of everything, no one will ever say how long it's going to be. No, we don't get to know when or if it's going to end, you know, but they can't, like, it always fades. Like, something cool, by the 8th, 9th issue, you're like, all right, get on with it. Robert Kirkman, on the other hand, that's a guy who excels at the long form ongoing soap opera format. I mean, that is, he's made for that. And that's the thing he's good at. Interesting. It's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer. I don't want to see writers change their structure.
There's only so many doing what Tom King's doing. There's only a handful. So it's not like there's a bunch to change. He might be the only one really doing it in a big way. Everyone else is doing the comic work, which is to write ongoing comics.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you even think about, like, over at, like, Black Label, there's all these sort of miniseries coming, and you know, how many are really?
Right, but what I'm saying
damn?
Is, like, Tom King's only doing those. He's not doing ongoing books.
Yeah, but when he did, like, Batman was all over the place. Like, there was really good things about it, but there also wasn't.
Right, and it was quickly apparent that his strength was really in these short stories, and so he's basically only doing those now, and so. there's hardly anyone else like that in mainstream comics. Everyone else is doing long mainstream, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just that's the business model of comics. So it's hard to say he's basically the only one.
Yeah, but we can look in history, though, and we can say, okay, well, but when there was Vertigo, there were, and there's definitely been situations at Image where you can see, like, there was stories of all different lengths. Like, you could, you know, a Vertigo series would come out, and this would be 24 issues, or this would be 50 issues, or this would be 60, and they got, you know, the time for it. You know, 100 Bullets was famously 100 issues, which was too many issues. You know, I don't think, you know, Azzarello's a guy who, I think he's probably good in 10 to 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never been able to hang on to anything that went much longer than that with him.
Wonder Woman,
obviously, he's got a ton of talent. Yeah, but again, those are outliers compared to all those other things he did. But even then, by the end of Wonder Woman, I was not as excited as I was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like there's miniseries. There's 60 issue, not minis, but 60 issue limited. Is that limited? Closed ended? I don't know. You know, where by the end I was into it 100% as much as I was at the beginning. You know, Invincible, I never got tired of.
Right.
You know, every issue was compelling, went through the whole thing. You know, the ending was significant. You know, so many of them just, like, peter out and then end eventually. Or if you're like Fables, you end several times.
How many issues did Invincible end up going?
70s, 80s? No, hundreds.
Yeah, way more than that. Way more than
yeah.
that. 144.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's
but that's exceptional though. That's not.
That's also an ongoing. I mean, like I know that if a book ends, it's not ongoing. But that's not
right. No, it's true.
That wasn't designed that way.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It's not like Lucifer or Sandman or whatever. Yeah, agree.
Contact at fanboy.com. That's you can write in like Jack. Thanks for writing in. You can also write in for a Media Explode show. If you do so, put Media Explode in the subject line so we know which show to assign it to. Thanks for writing. Let's plug some things and get out of here. We've had a lot of shows this past month in June, of extra shows. We had a Booksplode of Superman for All Seasons. We had a special edition review of DC Showcase Constantine, the House of Mystery, the animated shorts collection that came out. We just released, behind this show, our Media Explode for the month, in which we reviewed Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick, as well as a bunch of other things. We spent a lot of time talking about what we've been enjoying this past month. It was a
you
fun
did.
Show. I did the math, and I was only slightly longer than everybody else.
Okay. You're efficient.
Well, there was a lot of interruptions in mine. And then...
Listen, we have to let Ron on the show. If we didn't...
Next week... Are we going to have a Talksplode next week? This coming week?
Yeah, it's done. Yeah. Okay. 100%. And
so we
have another
those.
One. I have another one lined up, so...
Well, that's good, because then the meter restarts in July. And we'll have extra shows in July. They'll be... Thor, Love and Money, whatever.
Thunder?
Love and Thunder, Love and Thunder for review.
Love,
and,
for Thor, for Love Nor Money.
And other stuff. So I can't think about July right now. I can only think about June. So that's the shows we've had in June coming out. They're all available for you.
All right. There's shows over at ifanboy.com, as well as the archive of great comic book writing from our talented staff over the years. Much of it is outdated. But Jeff Reed wrote a lot of things that are completely evergreen.
That's true.
Those are there. All these looks at the past of comics from a guy who
the DC
loves
history
that stuff,
articles.
Loves that stuff more than anyone I've ever met. 100% unreservedly, without irony, he is into that business, specifically the DC stuff. If that wet your whistle, search his name, R-E-I-D, on ifanboy.com. You can follow Connor and I I know I reversed it. Individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and Jay Flanagan. And if you want to know what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, there's of course iFanboy on Twitter and at iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy. The minis, the time of the minis is nearly over, and then it won't make a lot of sense to subscribe to youtube.com/iFanboy, but perhaps you'd like to bookmark it.
We still put this show out there every week, and people do listen to it there. So
that's true.
There you go.
The full length shows are all uploaded. Like I said, this past week we have our former host, former co-host Ron Richards talking about Phonogram, which he loves. Then you have my comic book shelves, Josh's comic book shelves. When I finally gave in to the voyeuristic tendencies of the audience, I said, fine, I will show you my dumpy mass of unorganized comics. And if I remember correctly, and I scrolled through it to see what it was, 14 years ago, Josh is difficult to watch. for many reasons. The people really responded to that.
Yeah, they liked
I remember.
It. Yeah.
They loved that stuff. They like to see how other people live their comic book lives. So yeah, that stuff's there.
And finally, if you like the show, consider writing us a review or leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps people find the show. It helps the algorithm feature the show. The more ratings and reviews, the more the algorithm will be fed and therefore will elevate the show. And that's how people find podcasts. So thank you all who do that. It doesn't take a moment, not even for this show, just for any show you listen to. It's the best way to help a show you enjoy is to rate and review it. And even better than that, word of mouth.
Great algorithm. You will bless us with your picks.
Exactly. Even better than that, word of mouth. Your friends, your comic book store owner, anyone you're talking to, your sci-fi book club, you know, anything you're doing. What are you enjoying? Well, I really like this comic book show. So we thank anybody who does that, helping us spread the word. And that is it for this week's show. And until next week, I am Connor.
That makes me Josh. I am your humble co-host. And I appreciate everybody who's listening and letting us do this for so long.
Humble?
No.
Ha 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 ha